Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Cycling Something Else. I'm Yartzy Kershaw. I've got a robe full of dog, and I'm ready to blow. And I'm joined by Marty Sleaver.
Man, if I didn't know that was literal, that would have been very weird. Well, the ready to blow thing isn't literal, but the robe full of dog. Hello, everyone. Welcome. Let me know if our volumes are good, because I've had to change my volume in every stream, and people keep yelling at me, and I just don't want anyone to yell at me anymore.
Please don't yell at Marty. He is a sensitive soul.
He's very sensitive.
You can tell he's worried because he's smeared jam on his forehead.
No, I've had dry skin. This is weird. It's a thing. I don't know what's going on. And it shows up, for some reason, on this camera with this lighting setup, it looks really bad. And then on every other mirror in my house, it doesn't look bad. So I don't know what is going on. I think I'm dying. I think I might be dying.
Yeah, sounds like it. Well, yeah. Before you die, let's get through this week's podcast, which is on the subject of, can games really ever go back to their roots? That's the rhetorical question in the title. Anything specific bring this up, or is it just the sheer legion of remakes and re-releases we've seen being farted out lately?
Yeah, and it was... This kind of marketing has been used for a lot of games over what we're going to talk about it over a very long time. But most recently, Assassin's Creed Mirage was heavily marketed as this is going back to the series roots, and everything you loved about Assassin's Creed in the year of our Lord 2007 will be found in this game, and you will pretend it was like the end of the Bush administration. That's how much fun you'll have.
Without wishing to give too much away, because that's my review that's coming out publicly this week.
Yep.
Do you think it achieves that?
No. I think it stripped away a lot of the things that have become a little cumbersome and a little shaggy in modern Assassin's Creed. Mm-hmm. But I think it's when people say going back to a series roots, it's kind of a term that doesn't mean anything, or it actually means so many things to different people that it doesn't mean one single thing, and so it's kind of meaningless in an odd way.
Well, I still think we're in a sort of very reflective period in games right now, coming off the death of the live service era, where everyone's just sort of figuring out where to go from here, and naturally that's resulted in a lot of introspective games that are remakes of old stuff and attempts to bring back the old magic to see what still sticks with audiences. I would throw out Sonic Superstars as one of those as well.
Yeah, Sonic feels like one of those series where every other game that comes out, it feels like this is it. This is what you loved from the Genesis. This is Generations and Colors and Mania and Superstars. This is Sonic going back to its roots. And it just never, none of them ever seem to be the game that gets it right.
Is that just because we've moved on as a people? That it's from at a certain point, we're all used to having a lot of sort of invisible quality of life improvements that old games didn't have?
Now
tastes are different to how they used to be?
I think that's definitely part of it. I also think that we've talked a lot about nostalgia in the past, and I'm someone who actually really likes thinking about nostalgia and media that tackles nostalgia in an interesting way.
Well, we all like nostalgia.
Sure. I mean, nostalgia is the longing for our own, you know, personal time and place in our personal past.
Natural part of the human condition. We all wish we were all young again and had fully functional penises.
But yeah, exactly. And no Gorbachev marks on my forehead. But the problem when you look at art is you're not thinking about wanting the thing to go back to what it was. You're thinking about wanting to go back and feel the way you felt when you played that thing. And that is something that is possible to recapture, but is much harder than just saying, well, we're just going to give you the mechanics you had 15, 20, 30 years ago, and we're going to put some music you recognize, and boom, there you go. You got it.
I think Sonic Mania was a success story because, I think I've said before, it successfully recreates the old 2D Sonics in the way you remember them, not the way they actually were.
Yeah, yeah. Like, the movement feels... The movement is better than it was back then, but it feels like it felt when you played it as a kid.
The animation is improved. There's like twice as many frames for every animation, but on a cursory look, they just sort of look the same as to how you remember them from the old
2D games. It's but also the problem is, like, when you say you're going to go back to your roots for something, like, what does that actually mean? So I've been playing a lot of the Silent Hill games. I started The Room last night. Silent Hill 4, The Room.
I'll be interested to hear your perspective. It's
I've crawled through so many holes in that game. 3 hours of just hole crawling.
Yeah, we like crawling through holes, but it certainly split the fan base, that one.
It is. And so if a new Silent Hill game were to come out and said, this game is going back to its roots, and I'm not talking about like the remake of 2 or something. So they came out and a game was called Silent Hill 5, and they said it's going back to its roots. What would that mean to you if you just read that? Like, what are the roots of Silent Hill?
Well, I suppose if they'd said that, I would be expecting a pseudo open world-y low-key explorative survival horror like what the very first Silent Hill was.
Would you expect it to have PS1 era visuals, or would you expect it to have a modern look to it? Would you expect the camera to be fixed, or would you expect to have sort of the modern design sensibilities of being able to have full control over what you see?
I feel like I'm being cornered at a political press conference by a savvy
journalist. I'm not. I'm just saying that there's like so many different elements to where if I asked you, and if I asked me, and if I asked anyone else, I feel like people would have different definitions for, like, you. I think your thing very broadly is true, but some people might be like, well, we got to do the story of the cult. And then other people would be like, no, we have to do what Silent Hill 2 did, and you have to just exercise everything else and cut it and trim it, and it should be about one person's emotional trauma that they're working through in Silent Hill.
Well, that's what every bloody Silent Hill game was when they were being developed by the West. They were all trying to recapture that Silent Hill 2 magic, where you're a dude and you've got a dark secret or something.
Yeah, you were a prisoner, you're a truck driver. Yeah. And so it's kind of one of those, like what does that even mean? Like, who it's when a series is talking about we're going to give it to you like it was at the beginning, it's like, well, it was a lot of different things, and a lot of it changed and evolved because certain design things were bad. Like,
well, I suppose in the context of a modern game designer promising to do that. But yes, my headphones are plugged into nothing, Dr. Zebra. Thank you for noticing after all this time. It's because they're Bluetooth, and this is just the charging cord, and I can't be asked having to look for it every time I need to charge the headphones, so I just keep them in. Is that okay with you?
You really got derailed by that.
It was just the way he like suddenly exclaimed it. It felt like he thought he was making some kind of gotcha. Anyway, I guess if when I hear someone talk about going back to their roots, I expect something along the lines of Assassin's Creed Mirage. Like, they're going to go back to what was fundamentally fun about the original formula and strip back all the features, which Assassin's Creed has actually done on a fairly regular basis because it has this nasty habit of trying to innovate just by adding more weapons and attacks and gadgets, most of which just serve to make the game easier.
It feels like a lot of series get into that cycle of they keep adding and piling on new features and mechanics and everything. And then at a certain point, it becomes cumbersome. And they're like, we got to shed this weight. And then it circles back around. And it's like the cycle never ends. We've seen this with Call of Duty. We've seen this with
It's a natural process. The first wave of innovation is just like adding more to the formula. And the second wave of innovation is streamlining it. And why Boomer Shooters had a sort of had a second wind in recent times, because the standard for shooters had become a little bit too complicated with all kinds of this extra bollocks. People wanted to return to the simple pleasure of the core gameplay loop, I think.
And do you think Boomer Shooters succeed in that? Like, do you think Boomer Shooters succeed in going back to the roots better than franchises that try to go back to their own roots? Like, does it almost take an outside perspective in order to examine
There's a lot of modern retro style Boomer Shooters that do successfully streamline back to like the core formula. Mm-hmm. Something like Dusk did that very well.
Okay. Yeah.
But at the same time, when they do that, you also have to elevate the old material. Sonic Mania did that. Shovel Knight did that, where you take like the old formula, but you also take some of the lessons you've learned in the intervening years to, as we say, sort of make us feel like we're playing it for how we felt the first time we played it, even though it might not quite be how we remembered it, if we actually go back to play the actual originals.
Yeah, Tunic is another example, and Shovel Knight of these outsider perspectives who clearly, like, they're coming from a place of experience because those developers grew up on those games, and so they are making. It's not like a monolithic Ubisoft saying, oh, we're gonna try to reclaim the magic of 13 years ago, or an Activision saying we're gonna try to simplify Call of Duty and we're gonna bring it back to boots on the ground. But it is individuals, especially in the indie space, who grew up playing those games and were influenced by them and wanted to go into development because of those games, who feel like they have a better grasp on the exact things from those original games that made them so special. Like in Tunic's case, the exact things in the original Zelda that made it so special, that sense of discovery.
There's definitely more of there's more of a wholesomeness to like an indie developer saying, I'm going to make this thing that that's influenced by something I was passionate about back in the day, compared to when a AAA developer publisher talks about going back to the roots, because when they say it, there's an element of cynicism to it, especially in the case of Assassin's Creed, because it's like, you know, it's no secret that it's been like trundling along for so long with so many different installments, and that basically bringing out a new one is kind of meaningless at this point. Mm-hmm. And saying that we're going back to the roots is a sort of admission that they don't really know what they're doing at this point. It's going, we're going to like go back and back to where we knew the formula worked and see if we could figure out where the rot started setting in.
Yeah, and it's also confusing with a series like, I just keep going back to Assassin's Creed because it's a modern example, but one where Assassin's Creed was so influential, not only obviously in its own franchise, but in other Ubisoft franchises and in just open world games in general, in the way we traversed cities in open world games, in the way combat would work in something like an Arkham, and then now to Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2. And so you can go back to the original roots, but you also have to take into account that those roots have spread into other trees that have grown. And like, we have knowledge of those other trees. And so trying to go back and, like you said, kind of find that original sin without original rot. I don't think you said original sin. I think that was the Garden of Eden. Yeah, I think I'm starting to get my gardening metaphors. Yeah. I was
trying to keep the religious themes out of it.
Hey, for Assassin's Creed, it's fine to bring those in.
You've reminded me of something I said about Amnesia Rebirth, where I said Amnesia Dark Descent was a hugely influential horror game that has sort of the root of like a whole bunch of new and interesting genres of video game horror, like the first-person horror stuff, Five Nights at Freddy's, Alien Isolation. It's all sort of rooted from there. But Amnesia itself, with Amnesia Rebirth, felt like it hadn't really moved on from it at all. it wasn't really trying to go back to the roots technically, but it was sort of had never really moved on from the roots.
Yeah. And the, you think it was the, but I guess Amnesia is a weird series because so many different games in that series were handled by different developers, right?
The first one was Frictional Games, and then the Chinese Room did Machine for Pigs, but it was Frictional again with the next two.
Frictional did Rebirth and
The Bunker. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And before Amnesia, they did the Penumbra series, which was definitely building up to Amnesia and was similar in theme.
And did they also do Soma? Was that Frictional as well?
Yes. I always forget that one.
That one's neat.
I know, it's probably one of my favorite ones of Frictional Games, and yet when I'm listing Amnesia games, I keep forgetting about it.
Yeah, I guess it just doesn't have the franchisation, which is a good thing. I think it feels like a singular story.
Well, it feels different because what I liked about it was the hard sci-fi themes and the horror part. I could have done without. I felt like the monster chasing in Soma felt unnecessary and sort of got in the way of what I liked about it.
Yeah, to the point where they even, I think, very quickly added a mode that was like, you'll strip away the monster and you can just enjoy the story and the atmosphere. And
I did my part to convince them that would have been a good idea.
You did, exactly. But yeah, I don't know. Like, is it a single developer gets too lost in the sauce to be able to see, like, maybe they're too close to the source material to be able to truly go back to the roots from an objective standpoint.
It's also a risky move to make because it's an admission that you've kind of written yourself into a corner or don't know what to do next. Going off what else we've got on the thumbnail there, I noticed we've got Resident Evil 4 remake.
Yeah, and that's kind of the Resident Evil series as a whole, which has done this many times in many different ways.
I'm not sure what the plan is in Resident Evil Town. Because I don't really know where we're going from here. It feels like the remake series has just been a holding pattern.
Yeah. It felt like it was a three-game holding pattern.
Yeah.
It felt like it made sense. You're going to do 2, 3, and 4. And then what happens? And so now you have these two parallel lines where you have 7 and 8 and presumably a 9, which will probably expand on 8, so will feel more like 4. With Village, people are like, it's going back to its roots. Well, not its original roots. 7 went back to its first roots, and then 8 went back to its later roots, which changed the roots.
8 went back to the Resident Evil 4 roots, and it also went back to the more general roots of bringing the Umbrella Corporation into absolutely bloody everything.
Yeah. And again, you know, with Resident Evil like Silent Hill, you could, if you ask someone what is like the core tenet of the series, if you're going to go back to its roots, would people say you need to be in a spooky mansion? Would people say you have to have zombies? Would people say it has to be fixed camera, pre-rendered backgrounds? Does it have to be about Umbrella? Can it just be new characters?
Before we all started getting introspective and analytical about what the phrase going back to the roots means, I would have said that Resident Evil 7 felt like going back to the roots, because it was, you know, just a dude trapped in a haunted house.
I would say that is arguably one of the best examples of a game doing that. And that is definitely an example of a series that hit a point where it was like, we don't know what we are anymore. We've gotten too big and shaggy and people have lost interest. And so we're going to hit this button and we're going to rewind time and we're going to roll it back and do it again. Yeah. And it's funny, it's kind of the second time they did that, because it almost felt like first remake was them doing that, of saying like, okay, 2 and 3 and Code Veronica have gotten a little out of hand, so let's pump the brakes and sort of go back to the Spencer Mansion and fulfill our original vision.
And to a lesser extent, Resident Evil 4, which was increased in scope, but it was more concentrated from a story perspective.
It was just
save the president's daughter from the evil cult.
Yeah. But Resident Evil 7 definitely, you know, the family's house feels like the Spencer Mansion. It's claustrophobic. It goes back to, the survival horror of having limited ammo and having solved puzzles and constantly being chased.
And as for the remakes, I think what we learned from the RE4 make was that you can recapture a game, but you can't recapture the impact it had at the time.
Yeah. Which is kind of impossible, right? Because that impact was like a one-time bomb. Yeah.
Quite. So now the RE4 make just feels like more Resident Evil to put to tack on to the end of RE2 and RE3 make, which is a little disappointing compared to the huge impact Resident Evil 4 had.
Yeah, and I feel like we get that with a lot of times with sequels to, like, Tears of the Kingdom.
Another thing from the thumbnail. Let's go through it all.
Yeah, exactly. And again, that was just more of like a, you know, something for Zelda as a whole, which Breath of the Wild, one of the things they said with their mission statement was they wanted to go back to that feeling of exploration from the original Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, so and when you talk about going back to your, when you talk about going back to your roots, you either just like remake an old thing or you just actually go back to the fundamentals of the way the game is designed. And that's what Breath of the Wild did. Yeah. It was going back to basically like the very first Zelda games and the design principles that went into that. Go wherever you want and sort things out at your own leisure.
Yeah. And then, you know, Tears of the Kingdom comes along and kind of just does, like, I love Tears of the Kingdom. It's my favorite game of the year. But it does a lot of more of the same while introducing some big new ideas, but doesn't feel as, like, they didn't reinvent the wheel in the same way that Breath of the Wild did. And so I feel like Resident Evil Remake is unable to recapture that momentous moment of Resident Evil 4. Tears of the Kingdom feels like it in no way, shape, or form could it have recaptured that feeling of what Breath of the Wild did to reinvent the series.
Looking at the thumbnail still, am I right in thinking that weird shadowy figure trying to hide behind the logo there is a Final Fantasy 16 reference?
It is a Final Fantasy 16 reference. Thank you. Look, this is like your own little guess the game with the thumbnails.
Well, it was I was a little thrown by the sword. I thought it might have been Final Fantasy VII remake, but now that you've confirmed, yes, because that's another good example of a game that you could certainly imagine would have said, "We are taking Final Fantasy back to its roots."
Yeah, which is another franchise that. What the hell does that mean? Truly, what the hell does Final Fantasy?
Well, I guess in this case, it means we're going back to sort of Western-style Tolkien-esque fantasy in medieval castles and fighting dragons and shit. But also, we're adding a whole lot of Game of Thrones stuff.
Yeah,
because that's what's popular, I guess.
And it's funny because this isn't the first time the series has done that, right? Final Fantasy IX. Was like, all right, we get it. Final Fantasy 7 and 8, that was sci-fi. That was a lot of emo boys. We're going to pump the brakes, and we're going to go back to swords and castles and crystals and princesses.
Well, it was almost evoking a not quite the same kind of fantasy as the first Final Fantasy. Final Fantasy 9 felt a bit more... Ooh. Would you know what I meant if I said Brian Froudy?
No, is that that's a...
Okay, person. Never mind. Dark Crystal-y, Labyrinth-y.
I love Dark Crystal, yes.
That
Crystal-y.
Sort of slightly ugly Jim Henson-style fantasy from the early to mid-90s.
Yeah, which I kind of love. So, like, I thought that was cool. I don't think enough games pull from that as kind of a source material. Or
from that particular aesthetic.
Yeah, yeah. Who's the guy you mentioned? Was that just like a fantasy author?
Brian Froud. He was like a fantasy artist who specialized in sort of goblin looks. I think he did some of the art design for Labyrinth.
Oh, perfect.
Hang on.
I'm a big fan of goblins. So anyone who's trying to throw goblin balls my way.
Yeah, if you search for Brian Froud on Google Image Search, you'll see a lot of shit that looks like it belongs in the Dark Crystal.
There you go. Ooh, yeah, I like that. It was good stuff. Brian Froud, look at that. Shout out to Brian Froud. If you're in the chat, Brian, thanks for doing great work.
Is he even still alive?
I don't know. I like to shout people out just on the... There's like a 1 in a billion chance they are in chat, and sometime it will happen, and it'll be really great.
Right.
It'll
be huge. There'll be like 200 or so people watching this.
Yeah.
Brian Froud will somehow be among them.
Yeah. There was an interesting... I saw an interesting fun fact over the weekend, and it's with Super Mario Wonder, which you haven't had a chance to play.
No.
I played a ton of this weekend, and it is very much, it is pulling from the roots. It feels like it's pulling so many ideas from Mario 2, Mario 3, Mario World in a way that none of the 2D games since have done. But a really interesting thing about Mario Wonder is it has obviously a massive group of people worked on it. The original Super Mario Brothers in 1985, five people worked on it. Of those five people, four of them worked on Mario Wonder. So we
I'm
never
sure
get this
what
in
that
games.
Counts if that counts for much.
I'm just saying that so rarely in these instances of going back, I would be curious if a literal single person who worked on Assassin's Creed 1 worked on Assassin's Creed Mirage, let alone 80% of the people who had their thumbprint on the original Super Mario Brothers are also still at Nintendo and worked on Mario Wonder. So there is a sort of like an internal knowledge there in history.
Well, I guess, but there's not
lacking
a lot of,
from a lot of
there's not a lot of crossover in the skills needed to make a modern style game and the skills needed to make an NES game.
No, but at the very least, you have people who have institutional knowledge. You can go over to a person who worked on the thing you were trying to replicate from 30 years ago and talk to them. And I don't know if that's the case with, you know, Resident Evil 7 to Resident Evil 1. Or
well, this is the problem with
like Doom 2016 to the original Doom.
Well, this is a problem I've often complained about is how games don't really have any, you know, face behind them. There's no, we don't really have names like we did back in the day. Mm-hmm. Like when American McGee and used to stick his name on everything.
Yeah.
No one's really taking responsibility. We just look at who the developer was, and the actual specific development team could be something vastly different. And that's why so many game franchises just bring out sequels that feel vastly different.
Yeah.
It's been the case for a while. That was always the case with Team Silent as well, with the first four Silent Hill games. You might have noticed there's a bit of a shift in tone going from game to game.
Yeah, and there's different, because I mean, some of that team went on to form the Siren team, right? And went on to make Siren.
Yeah, I think like I remember that the team that had the most members in common with the team for Silent Hill 2 was Silent Hill 4, which makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Silent Hill 3 feels a little overstated atmospherically, and Silent Hill 4 feels close to Silent Hill 2 on that sort of level.
Yeah, I would say closer. And, like, the games pull references. Like, this is the serial killer that you keep referencing in 4 is the serial killer that's directly referenced in 2, right? So it's
yeah,
like
that's literally, they just pulled out that one throwaway thing for Silent Hill 2 and decided to make a whole game out of it, which is fun. And also,
it's one of those that's not like necessary to have known the lore, but if you have, you're like, oh, I gotcha. I'm picking up this name.
Also, there's a major NPC in Silent Hill 4 who's James Sunderland's dad.
Really?
Have you gotten that far?
Have I met him yet?
I don't know. Have you?
I'm like 3 hours into
the game. Like the superintendent of the apartment building.
Get the fuck out of there. Really? I keep seeing him through a peephole.
Yeah,
he keeps like trying to get me to pay rent, but I live in a pocket dimension and I can't.
His name's Frank Sunderland, and there are certain moments where if you look at like some of the things around your apartment, Henry's internal monologue would say, I remember the supervisor saying that his son went missing in Silent Hill a while back.
Oh, I like it. I like it. Silent Hill, you've done it again.
He actually looks quite a bit like James Sunderland if you look at his face.
I kept wondering if he was that serial killer so far, but I don't think he is the serial killer. No. And every time I look out the window, there's more handprints because people keep dying on me.
No, it's
and
not
I
a,
like how when
it's...
you crawl through the holes, you go to a world and it's like water world, forest world, pipe world.
Yeah, forest water world is basically like Sonic the Hedgehog in that respect.
Exactly. When any of those things chase, man, I got to my first thing that spooked me in that game, which is one of those like bulbous, like two-headed kind of monsters. It's like big chunky guys. I encountered them. Ooh, give me the spookies.
I remember one time, like over like four playthroughs of Silent Hill 4, I looked out the window at one point and a head fell past the window and it scared the absolute shit out of me. I was terrified of looking out the window for the entire rest of the time.
In the game, not in real life.
Yeah, Silent Hill 4.
I keep waiting for jump scares every time I look out my window or every time I look in the peephole. I'm like, they're gonna jump scare me. I know they're gonna jump scare me.
But yes, to get things back on topic, Silent Hill 4 was actually, you know, a continued experimentation with Silent Hill formula. It doesn't feel much like Silent Hill 1 or 2, but it's undeniably a Silent Hill game. It's very much got those vibes. The problem with the subsequent Western ones is that they all felt like they'd all gotten into the series because they liked Silent Hill 2 so much, and that's what they thought Silent Hill was. It's a dude being confronted with guilt for his past sins.
Yeah, instead of coming at it with, like, an original take on the spirit of the series, they just tried to emulate and replicate the one that meant the most to them.
George Lucas in the chat just said, perhaps we can get Silent Hill 4 The Room remake if Silent Hill 2 remake is a big hit. I would, controversially, I would be absolutely behind a Silent Hill 4 remake. Because it's got so many good ideas, but it's got such critically bad gameplay decisions.
However, it does have the one really, like, so far the item box thing, I'm like, why are we doing this? But it does have that really cool puzzle where you have to dig up the key, and the riddle says, like, you'll be stuck in the loop.
Yeah.
And then you have to take the key back home, put it in the box, go to the new place, take the key out of the box, and then you can use it.
Yeah, that's cool. It's just the fucking unstackable ammo and ghosts that harass you that you can't kill.
I've just been running away from the ghosts because I'm like, I can't deal with you guys.
Well, that's the annoying thing. You're supposed to be able to, like, systematically examine the environment and look for all the hidden things to pick up and puzzle solutions. So you don't want to be getting, you know, chased away from everything by ghosts all the time.
Yeah. Man, what if Silent Hill 2 remake is good? What if?
It won't be.
What if?
It won't be.
We live in a world where it's possible it could be good.
Well, we don't, because it's a world where it's being developed by Bloober Team, so it won't.
What if they learned? You know what? Even bad developers can... Nope.
Give me an example.
I don't have one. I'm going to be honest. My unlimited optimism couldn't even...
Give me an example of a developer that learned from their mistakes and went from making a notoriously bad game to making a really good one.
I mean, we have, like, the game success stories, like the turnarounds of a No Man's Sky and a Final Fantasy 14 and a Rainbow Six Siege and a Warframe, but those don't really count. They don't even count for my argument.
You know, there probably are examples. My memory is sort of clawing for a couple.
I mean, there's those games those live service games that fixed over time.
Do you remember the original Bombshell game that was like an isometric shooter?
No.
Well, it was absolute arse. Terrible. Huge pile of shit. But then I think it was the same developers went on to make Ion Fury, which was actually really good, with the same IP.
Oh. Yeah, and they co-developed Ghost Runner.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's why my memory was groping for it. I remember playing a game that I really liked, and I looked at the developer, and they'd made, like, the original Bombshell, which was crap.
Yeah.
No, that's what I was remembering. Ghost Runner is actually pretty good. And we've got a review code for the sequel, but I'm not sure if I'm going to have time to play it, because I'm playing Spider-Man 2 all week.
I believe the embargo is already up, and I don't know if Casey's review is up, but he really liked it. So apparently the game's really good.
Yeah, but was it just good because it's just more of the first game, which was good, or did they actually improve things? Like, the boss fights in Ghost Runner were awful.
Because you really like the boss fights in 2.
Oh, really? Well, perhaps I should give it some time.
Give it a little whirl. Yeah, give it a little runsies.
Review will
be out at 2 p.m. CT.
Oh, you spoiled it, Nick. Now everyone knows that KZ liked it.
Oh, shit. Sorry. We don't know. Maybe I lied. Maybe I misinferred from reading his script.
Yes, maybe you're just playing the long game. Just messing with our heads.
Exactly. Like a Silent Hill 4, a spooky status effect. What would you say is the most successful? Like, do you think Doom 2016 was a successful foray into going back to the roots?
Yes, but as I said at the time, it's not really going back to the roots. It doesn't really play that much like the original Dooms. Mm-hmm. Plays a little bit like Quake, because Quake let you blow the shit out of things and had a lot of verticality to it.
Yeah.
Not so much the original Dooms. Besides, you know, visual themes and all that. So I'd say that was a successful new game that took the philosophy of stripping down the shooter formula until it was just focusing on the primary gameplay loop of shooting the baddies.
Yeah.
In like defiance of the sort of live service tradition, where suddenly you might not have to shoot everything. Maybe you have to make friends with some of the things that you can shoot, like in like Deus Ex and the like.
Yeah. But I'm sure there were still probably some people who were like, well, if it's not 2D, it's not Doom. Or if it's not, you know, like
2.5D, yeah.
2.5D, then it's not Doom. So you get to, like anything in life, roots seem to be even subjective.
I noticed we've got Mortal Kombat 1 on the thumbnail there.
Yeah, I had that because that was a, like, going back to your roots in a, like, literal narrative way.
Well, that's a series that's never fucking left its roots.
Yeah, yeah, it's like too afraid to travel. It doesn't want to live too far away from home.
And it keeps rebooting its bloody canon. So I don't know where the hell it's supposed to go from here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a, oh, we rebooted the canon. Oh, it didn't take. Oh, we rebooted the canon. Oh, it didn't take again. Oh, it didn't take literally within the same game in which we rebooted the canon.
What a mess. Mortal Kombat, what are you doing?
Mortal Kombat.
I know they keep selling, though, so if they keep selling, I don't think it's going to stop.
Everyone wants to be the first one to
put... next game, Mortal Kombat 2?
Everyone wants to be the first person to put out a YouTube compilation of all the fatalities. And no, the next game is not going to be Mortal Kombat 2. That is never how it's worked. There is no case of a game titling itself such and such 1 being followed up by such and such 2.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's part of like a long-term franchise. I mean, the last time they just called the game Mortal Kombat, everyone was still calling it Mortal Kombat 9.
Names are confusing. That's the problem with these franchises. They never had the foresight to be like, what are these names going to look like in 15, 20, 30 years?
Well, that's what I keep saying. Rest assured, I'm going to complain about it this week when my review of Lords of the Fallen comes out.
Does Final Fantasy have it right? Just put a number at the end?
I'd say so. I mean,
then if you have a direct sequel to a game, just put a 2 after it. Like, then
well,
two.
Yeah, I mean, there's
but it works.
What's wrong with that formula?
No, nothing.
Nothing's wrong with that formula, exactly.
Yeah. Everyone knows the order the games come in. If they know that the Final Fantasy X has a sequel, it's just called X-2.
And suddenly we got into this terribly confused space where we have to figure out what constitutes a sequel that justifies putting another number on the end.
Yep.
Assassin's Creed stopped with the numbers at 4.
Yeah.
Now it's just Assassin's Creed subtitle, like the Sonic franchise.
Yeah, yeah. Chaos Emerald brings up the Battlefield series, which might be the worst, where it's got a V, that's a 5, and it's got a numeral 1, that's for World War 1, and then it's got big numbers, and then it's got hard lines. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Resident Evil was another one that was very weird about what constituted a numbered sequel. Because you had Code Veronica, you had Dead Aim, you had Outbreak, you had all of them.
Yeah, Code Veronica didn't get a number, but Nemesis did. Like, how does that work?
Yeah.
Veronica's like way longer than Nemesis. Doesn't matter. Whatever.
Grand Theft Auto, that's another one. 9 Grand Theft Autos down the line, we suddenly get Grand Theft Auto 4.
Yeah, the fact that we look Vice City and San Andreas didn't count as their own Grand Theft Autos.
Somehow,
weird.
Shall we go to Super Chats?
Let's.
I think everyone's got a few examples to bring out. Yes, don't forget, all of these are going towards the funding of Adventure is Nigh Season 4 to be filmed in person yet again. Because we go...
31%! 31!
Oh, blimey. It's coming along.
It is. We might get to a third by the end of October.
And there's 69 days to go. Nice.
That's a sex number.
But Heisco helps us along significantly with a nice pink super chat to the tune of £49.99 British pounds, which are the best pounds, and says, it is my birthday today and wanted to thank you all for the entertainment you have given.
Oh,
thank you very
much,
Heisco. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Heisco. I hope you have an ice cream cake.
Thank you for giving us the birthday money your parents put in your card. That'll pay for, like, maybe half a round of McDonald's when we're out shooting Adventures in Season 4.
A lot of McDonald's orders.
Rasp Museum, member for 18 months in Early Access, says, games probably shouldn't go back to their roots. Well, you know, you can never go home again, can you?
Yeah. I mean, it has worked in the past. Like anything, I don't think it should be a hard and fast rule, because we mentioned Resi, we mentioned Doom. Those are series
Mega Man
that
9.
Mega Man 9. These are series that, like, they find themselves in a pickle, and then they don't know what to do. And sometimes going back to the roots, if done well, works.
I think that's a very big if, though.
Sometimes reinventing yourself works.
I mean, if you say if done well, that sort of makes your statement fairly meaningless. I mean, anything would be good if done well, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but that's why I'm against the idea of broad sweeping. This shouldn't happen. No one should do
that. Okay, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
Don't be so broad, Rasmuseum.
Oh, maybe. Rasmuseum, I think you could be just as broad as you want.
Put a space in your name somewhere.
Ah.
Zaratha gives $2 and says, for either Adventurous Nye or Marty's funeral, context related.
Yes, it's my forehead funeral.
Can't get much of a funeral.
It is insane. I think this camera might be cursed. Because when I look at my bathroom mirror, it doesn't look bad at all. And when I look in this camera, I look like I got shingles. I don't even know what shingles are, but I look like I got shingles.
You look like you got acne scarring, I was going to say.
It's not. I don't. It's weird. Doesn't even show up in the other mirror. I think it's haunted.
Maybe you should get a tan. Maybe it won't show up. Maybe you should go out in the sun a bit.
I can't. I fucking have to sit at this desk all day, fucking goofing and spoofing about remakes and roots and fucking playing Devil May Cry.
Well,
that doesn't count.
Mount a laptop to your head and then go touch some grass.
I would like to touch some grass. That would be very nice.
Fusionator gives $4.99 and says, can a game series that has transitioned from a different format to being a supermassive open world ever really go back? Looking forward to more Adventurous Nye. Arkham Asylum, that transitioned to an open world format. Do you think that could ever go back to the original, more Zelda-ish formula?
Yeah, at a certain point, does a done bun can't be undone? Like, you can't. You've crossed a threshold that you can't go back to.
The genie won't go back into the bottle. The toothpaste won't go back into the tube.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, Arkham, when a series, when it's all about every iteration has to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Well, I've always felt that, you know, always getting bigger is sort of an unsustainable model. But a game can sometimes ramp up things by focusing harder on something. I always thought Silent Hill 2 did that in comparison to Silent Hill 1, which was Silent Hill 1 had a broader scope. It had a larger map. It had more open world elements. It had this big world-saving plot about defeating the evil cult. And Silent Hill 2 was a relatively focused thing about a small handful of dudes just sorting out their own problems in a slightly less open worldy setting.
Yeah. I mean, I guess story-wise, things could be pared back. I would say Assassin's Creed Mirage succeeds, whereas Valhalla was about, almost Forrest Gumping your way through medieval history.
I would argue Assassin's Creed Mirage feels less, not so much streamlined as just cut down.
Those are different?
Well, being streamlined just means you've reduced the weight so you can move faster and be more generally more engaging. And just being cut down just means there's less stuff in it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I gotcha. So it's not a nuanced way to trim things. It's almost
It's not so much pruning a bonsai as taking a chainsaw to it.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Rufus Omega in the chat brings up a good example. Can FromSoft go back to linear design after Elden Ring? Well, I mean, we had Armored Core, which is the most linear design of FromSoft in
about as linear as you can get, really.
Yeah, but in terms of the sort of the Souls formula, can
that's
a good point.
If they brought out Bloodborne 2, I wouldn't say no at this point.
Yeah, just because I couldn't jump on a horse and go across the world like an Elden Ring. It is interesting. I mean, a lot of times...
I just had a hideous vision of open world Bloodborne. It's set across the entire city like a Spider-Man game or something.
God. I don't know. It's sometimes a developer's success can paint themselves into a corner, which is... which is interesting. It could be a double-edged sword. I don't know. Well, let's see. Right. I'm curious after the Erdtree DLC that is coming out for Elden Ring. We don't know what they're up to next. So, like, could they just do a Dark Souls 4? That's just traditional Dark Souls design.
I wouldn't be surprised if they decided after Elden Ring they were just done with Dark Souls.
With that whole thing and just going doing different games.
Elden Ring does feel like a sort of great big party blowout to end the season.
Yeah. Yeah, and who knows, now that, you know, Microsoft owns Activision, and Activision owns the rights to Sekiro, do they back up a Brink's truck of money to say, hey, we want our own exclusive FromSoft game, please make Sekiro 2?
No, well, only time will tell.
Time will tell.
Will Cooling gives £2 and says, I love Proteus because it cut out aimless wandering. Kai. Yeah, I said much the same thing. I was actually very impressed by Proteus's level design. I almost never got lost. It was always clear where to go next, even though it was doing the classic boomer shooter thing where every level is sort of a maze where you have to find all the different colored keys to find the way out.
Yeah, that's the that's a good example of going back to what a game did originally, but fixing it with modern design sensibilities. Like, you don't need, like, in order to feel what you felt when you played the original Doom, you don't have to just be lost all the fucking time. Like, you can streamline that with the techniques that have been developed over the past 30 years of level design and traversal and player orientation.
Prizefighter 26 gives $5 and says, worth remembering how a game is a result of the people who worked on it, and years later there's often not even a person from the first team still there.
That's
something we mentioned.
With the Mario thing. That being said, those five people who were very, like...
You said four out of the five. Who was the straggler? Who was the stubborn bastard who couldn't give them all five?
I actually don't know. He just might have left Nintendo or literally might have died over the past 35 years.
How people keep doing that, isn't it?
I know, lazy. But while, obviously, a team of five people, they're all going to be very hands-on with the game. At a certain point, like, Miyamoto is one of those five people, and he wasn't that hands-on with Mario Wonder. Like, he was probably walking by and was like, what if this thing started dancing? Or, like, what if you put this block there?
Then the game micromanaged much.
He doesn't seem like a guy who does. No, he just seems to care about his Pikmin. Now, that Pikmin team, Miyamoto's probably micromanaging that.
Relevantly, Dr. Zebra gives $2 and says, how about those lame new Super Mario Brothers games?
Not a fan of them.
There's sort of multiple tracks for Mario games. You got Mario sort of spin-offs, your sports games and your typing tutors and shit. That's just the wasteland.
Yeah.
You've got the tentpole Marios, which are Mario 64, Mario Sunshine, Mario Galaxy, Mario Galaxy 2, and Mario Odyssey. And then you have what I like to call keeping the lights on Mario, where they just hash out a platformer that's very heavily inspired by older Mario 2D platformers or the like, ensure that Mario still has a presence in everyone's minds. And I would classify the new Super Mario Brothers games under keeping the lights on Mario. And I'm thinking Mario Wonder might well be the same sort of thing.
I agreed with the first half of that statement, heavily disagree with the Wonder statement after playing it this weekend. I was constantly surprised and in a state of wonderment.
Well, you've really talked it up, and I'm going to hope I'll be impressed when I play it.
You're not going to be impressed. You're not going to be impressed because you don't like Joy. You know what?
How dare
you? I like
Joy
so much, it just starts blemishing my forehead. That's how much Joy I love. My mind's going to crack open like in Bloodborne, and my insight's going to come out.
I don't like Joy. You're channeling one of those assholes in my comments who say I just hate all video games, is what you're doing.
Except those 35 games you like.
Yeah, well, that's quite a lot of games when you think about it.
One per year.
Abdel Corrales, member for 19 months in early access, says, can you have nostalgia if the thing never leaves? Well, no, Abdel Corrales. I've made that very point. Nostalgia is very specifically a longing for things that have been lost in time.
Yeah.
So you can't really have nostalgia for Star Wars anymore, because Star Wars never bloody goes away.
Yeah. Something, that's sort of the power of something. People get excited for something to return because they haven't had it for a while. That was the excitement. And
that's why everyone was excited for the prequels. It has been like 20 years since the last Star Wars film.
Yeah, yeah.
They've been like getting by with the methadone of the expanded universe and like video game tie-ins and the like. This was going to be the first actual Star Wars movie. And everyone was like throwing shit fits over being the first in line to see it. And then The Phantom Menace came out and everyone thought it sucked.
Not the kids. The kids like it now.
Yeah, I noticed it's had a sort of a redemption because people are stupid. Goes to show that's what happens when you don't put enough funding into education in this country.
That joy thing coming out again. You need to pump the brakes. You need to respect the children.
People who think The Phantom Menace was good should go back and watch all the classic like 70s sci-fi movies. They should watch Star Wars. They should watch Logan's Run. They should watch 2001: A Space Odyssey. They should watch Silent Running. And then come back and tell me The Phantom Menace was a good film.
2001? No one should. 2001 and Phantom Menace don't have anything to do with each other.
No.
I do like my chimps. I like my chimps at the beginning of 2001. Those are great monkeys. And I like my big baby at the end. All movies should begin with chimps. And
wow, you really appreciate that movie on like the most surface level imaginable.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. And then he's just going in a full ass circle. It's great.
I like I like seeing the funny monkeys in the thoughtful philosophical film about the progress of humanity.
You remember when the big rectangle shows up? And everyone's like, Jesus Christ, where'd that rectangle come from? That was great.
Yeah, it makes more sense in the book.
Now, readings for nerds.
Well, then you can call me Mr. Nerd.
Have you read the sequels?
2010 onwards.
Correct.
No, yes, actually. I have seen the film for 2010. But that's about all I've indulged of the post-2001 shit.
It is a difficult thing to talk about because when you said post-2001, I was just assuming all media post-2001.
No.
Everything's it's very difficult to name things again, like we said.
Wesley Thomas gives $5 and says, I've said before, everyone demands innovation, but not like that. Change it back at once. We don't know what we want most of the time. Another thing I have frequently said in not so many words, Wesley Thomas. If you ask people what they want and then try to give them what they ask for, they will complain that it's not different. So you might as well just make whatever the hell you want and hope that with a wing and a prayer, it'll be the thing that really, you know, gels with people.
Yeah.
Nobody predicted that It's Morbin Time would become a meme.
No one did predict that. And then Sony was like, hey, let's capitalize with it. And by the time the movie got back into the theaters, everyone was like, we don't care about this anymore, actually.
Hey, look at that. Corporate people trying to capitalize off memes. That has always worked. That has never been cringe worthy. Zaratha gives $5 and says, Marty likes Goblin? Goblin D's nuts. Sorry, I'm contractually obligated. Okay, not really, sorry. You're having a little in-joke with Zaratha there.
I like goblins. I think it was just a Goblin D's nuts.
Oh, that's right. We were talking about goblins earlier.
I was talking about goblins, and Nick loves his D's nuts jokes. So I think Sir Arthur was like, and Nick said, "Fucking got him in the chat." Nick, go to bed.
I played a goblin mage in World of Warcraft a while back. I wanted to call him Gobjob, but the filter screened that out. So I called him Gob Off instead, which the filter didn't figure out.
I like Gobjob quite a bit. Well done.
Fungus Finder gives $2 and says, Marty is likely to love all creatures, even goblins.
I love goblins. I love goblins. I love holes and voids. That's why I'm really smitten with Final
Do you
Fantasy,
like the parasitic wasps that lay their eggs in the eyes of third world country children?
Yeah, they're adorable.
Jeez. Even when their larvae burst out of the eyeball of a severely underprivileged child.
Yeah, especially that. That's my favorite part.
You monster. Christ. Baradis gives $2 and says, weren't games' roots their fleeting newness? I suppose one could take that angle philosophically. But as we say, saying going back to the roots doesn't really mean anything anyway.
Yeah, it's trying to recapture the excitement and success of a moment, which is difficult.
Okay, then. Blue McNeil gives $5 and says, new trailer for Hades 2 has a fun exchange between Zach Reyes and Hades, where Zach asks Dad about new lead, his brother Bofides, to Hades replies, Bofides nuts. Well, thank you for utterly ruining that joke, Blue McNeil. I haven't seen that trailer, but if I do now, that joke will be have absolutely no impact on me whatsoever.
Like, I saw the trailer for Hades 2, and I didn't. Maybe there's a new trailer I didn't see, but I feel like I didn't register a Bofides joke the first time around.
Anyway, I thought Zach Reyes wasn't in Hades 2. I thought it was a new protagonist.
I feel like this might be a goof. This might not be a real. This might be a goof and not in reference to a real trailer.
Well, even as a goof, it fell flat then.
You know what? Goofs are in the eye of the beholder. It didn't work for me either, if I'm being honest. But maybe it would work for the younger generation who likes The Phantom Menace.
I don't think those people have anything Phantom to Menace. Offer the world of culture.
What are you talking about? The kids? They made great vines.
Oh, yeah, great. Is this how you know aging is happening? When the thing the kids like sort of bounces off you completely?
Yes, that is one of the ways.
Oh, well, guess I'll just kill myself. Guess I'll get on the phone to Dignitas and stop blighting Dignitas. The world with my presence.
Dignitas.
It's that Swiss company that does the voluntary euthanasia.
Oh, yeah. Whatever happened to Dr. Kevorkian? Is he all right? Remember that guy?
In prison, I assume. You don't really develop in your career when you're in prison.
You know what? Shout out to Dr. Kevorkian if you're in the chat.
Salute. Anyway, wasn't he killing people who didn't actually want to die?
Oh, I think they wanted to die.
Probably. That was what Dr. Harold Shipman did.
Who's that man? That just sounds like a murderer.
He's another doctor who murdered their patients.
Although yeah, not no, because... Kevorkian did it based on consent.
Okay. Well, maybe he was before his time then.
I think Kevorkian is great.
Zaratha gives $5 and says, I've realized my last two supers were targeting Marty, so here's some Marty appreciation re-eyes. Heart, crown.
Re-eyes. Thank you so much, Sir Arthur. I didn't feel targeted at all. I think your goofs were very funny. If we can't laugh at ourselves, we're doomed to become little Dr. Kevorkians. Well, think about it.
Thanks for taking it on the chin.
Took it on the forehead, am I right?
I assume you have a chin in there somewhere.
My chin hasn't seen the light of day in probably 15 years. I am afraid. I don't even know what my chin looks like. I don't know if I have a strong chin. Well, I don't know if I have a weak chin.
Well, nobody knows what their chins look like, because it's hard to look down at it. Unless you've got a really big one.
Jay Leno?
Sure. The dude who eats pianos gives $6.90 and says, nice. Oh, I see. 69. Thank you.
Again, the
and Dr. Zebra gives $5 and says, yeah, it's when you wear your scarf like that, it reminds me of a priest's stole. Also reminds me of my first time. Oh, here we bloody go again. I don't wear a scarf. It's a bathrobe with a grey lining. It's getting a bit chilly in Northern California now that autumn's rolling on. And Toffee likes when I wear my robe because he can hide in it. Yeah, let's go back to sleep. Chaos Emerald gives £2 and says, to adapt old ideas to new tech can be bad, sadly. Frowny face.
Yeah, I mean, That's the other thing, is certain ideas just worked at the time and don't work now.
Quite. A lot of developers whose like heyday was in an era of 2D graphics. Peter Molyneux springs to mind.
Yeah. And, yeah, that...
3D graphics was an absolute sea change.
Yeah, I feel like that weeded so many really creative... And it sucked because for a while... People just couldn't make 2D games, right? It was like, it has to be 3D. Whereas now it's like, fucking, we got room for anything. And so, you know, you could have creators who didn't really adapt to the modern sensibility still be able to make things on a smaller scale in the indie market. But that definitely wasn't the case when we first jumped to 3D.
There you go. John Connor gives $5 Canadian. Says, a good remaster with quality of life improvements is a great way to return to the roots and make it look as impressive as when you first played it. So not like a remake in the Dead Space remake style. Just a re-release of something on Steam with like a resolution upgrade. And yeah. like the Metroid Prime remake, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
Fix the controls so they didn't suck so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
No, yeah, I'm also thinking about how you always say it makes a lot of sense of don't remake the masterpieces, remake the
yeah, but also keep the old masterpieces available to be played. Yes.
That is, I'm 100% with you there. My God.
The so, that, you know, like, fix them up so they still work on modern hardware, but don't go too nuts.
And also make games less scary by changing the font on the sign to Silent Hill in the HD collection. Give me Comic Sans.
To Comic Sans, yeah. Silent Hill isn't a font. Should be, though.
What kind of a font would it be?
It would be the font that the logo has been in for a while.
There you go.
There you go. HJorth87 gives 20 Danish kroner and says, random question, Art Deco or Art Nouveau? Well, I'd have to go with Art Deco because that's the art style they used in Batman the Animated Series, which can only be good.
This is true. I want a Batman the Animated Series game. I mean, they already made one.
Yeah, there's tons, dude.
But I want, what if Rocksteady did a Batman the Animated Series game?
Well, that's what Batman Arkham Asylum basically was. I mean, they brought all the voice actors back.
Yeah, but like the look. I wanted the look. Didn't have the Art Deco.
As I say, there have been a few Batman the Animated Series adaptations on 16-bit platforms, I recall.
Yeah, there was a Sega Genesis one. There was a Super Nintendo one. I want a modern one. I also just don't want them to be making that Suicide Squad game. Just let them do something else.
Well, apparently they've been rethinking things on that.
Worried.
Obviously, there's probably a limit to what they can change at this stage. Sure. But maybe it won't be full of gear grinding bullshit. Who knows? Maybe they're going to Team Fortress 2 it and completely remake it from the ground up to make it good.
Theory, that's coming soon. That's still slated for February, although I could absolutely see it being delayed.
Spectral Chicken, member for 3 months in credit, says, going back to the roots to me feels like a developer or publisher trying to keep a franchise going until they can figure out the direction they want to take it in. Well, as I say, that's basically where the whole industry is at this point.
Yeah, a holding pattern.
Yeah. Waiting for the next big thing for everyone to rip off.
Yeah. I'm glad that the bubble seems to have burst for live service games.
Yeah, I'm certainly glad for that. I wish it had taken the last time it happened with MMOs. But it seems this is like 3D in films. This is a lesson we just have to learn every decade or so.
Yeah. I mean, the worrisome thing, though, is like games are so fucking expensive to make. Well, at least like the current AAA idea of what a game should be is so expensive and time-consuming.
Well, there's, people are rethinking things. Assassin's Creed Mirage toned things down. They even released it ahead of time because there wasn't so much bullshit in it. I mean, it's not very good, but it's a sign of good things.
Yeah. Yeah, and you even have, I feel like developers like Insomniac, who releases pretty good games on a pretty regular basis. You know, we got Spider-Man in 2018, Miles Morales in 2020, Ratchet & Clank in 21,
Well, it was probably easy to hash out these games because they've got all the assets on hand. Sure. And oh, look, they got another Spider-Man game out by just, using the same map as before because it's New York.
And it's got Brooklyn and Queens. And let me tell you.
Is that new?
Yep.
Oh, it's hard to tell. Lady Luminous, member for 3 months in bonus content, says, is Nintendo best at going to their roots stroke doing nostalgia, or are indies better at capturing that feeling? Well, I think Nintendo is another case of never having really gotten off their roots.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've never really gone away, much like Star Wars in the present day. They've been churning out the Marios since the beginning.
Yeah, and even if a series does go away for a little while, it always sort of exists somewhere in the Nintendo ether, whether as a, you know, backwards compatible or downloadable service game or...
Where's Kid Icarus these days?
Kid Icarus went away for a very long time and then got Smash.
Actually, where's like half the Smash Brothers cast? Where's the Ice Climbers?
But I mean, is adding them to Smash part of the idea of them never going away?
Oh, well, that's, you know, Smash is just like the stud farm that they all go to when they're being put out to pasture.
Yeah, that's like, oh, we can put them here because you'll never, like, this way you won't forget about them. And if we ever want to pull them out and someone has a good idea for a game, then you'll be like, oh, it's the character from Smash. Like, but
this way I'm they sure can't Ness cause any Ness trouble. The Nintendo just sort of helpfully guiding a severely aged Captain Falcon back to Smash says, yes, that's right, Captain Falcon. You were once very popular. Good, just go back inside now. Take before you get run system. Over. Hunter Roach gives $10 and says, the thing that popped to mind with this topic was Metroid Dread. Not sure if it counts as going back to the roots as it is just a sequel, but IMO, it captured the feel of the classic games with modern controls. If you like.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would say that it went back to its roots, because it felt very different than, like, a Metroid 1.
Yeah, and it was sort of building on the plot from Metroid Fusion.
Yeah, it was really, really liked Dread, though. I thought it was excellent. And again, that is an interesting, like, how we talked about with Assassin's Creed roots being elsewhere. Like, the roots of Super Metroid are all over... All sorts of design, indie and AAA, and so they weren't just pulling from Metroid's past, but the entire genre's past.
Mr. Arms and Legs gives $5 Canadian. Says the irony of the going back to the roots is that the best way is to refine the design stroke gameplay so it feels fresh like the first time we played it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that would be like a Sonic Mania, I suppose.
Yeah.
Or a Doom 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Yes, we've been over all that. Merchant of Life gives £10 and says, would love to see God of War go back to its roots, just throwing out all the character development for no reason. Kratos just mass murdering all he sees, boy in horror of what his dad used to be.
Yeah, like it felt like 2018 made such a deliberate attempt to...
Yeah, again, that's a genie stretch. That's not going back in the bottle.
Yeah.
Can't really, because it's all like soulful and emotional now. Like, remember the end of God of War Ragnarok, where Kratos sees his future and has a big old sook.
Mm-hmm. Big old sook.
You couldn't imagine going from that big old sook to slashing the shit out of monsters again.
What is a big old sook?
Well, he cries. He cries at the end of God of War Ragnarok.
I'd never heard of a sook. I'd never heard that word before.
Well, I guess sook in Australian parlance is more like sulking.
Okay. No, I liked it. I thought it was great.
It's, you say, like, if someone's throwing a tantrum, you say someone's throwing a big old sook.
I love it. 10 out of 10.
So not quite the same thing as having an emotional tear in your eye, like Kratos did at the end of Ragnarok. But never mind. Palash T gives $4.99 and says, games going back to their roots reminds me of classic rock bands who try the exact same thing and fail every time. See Rolling Stones, Aerosmith, etc. The Rolling Stones, Palash T, the most popular rock bands, one of the most popular touring acts still to this day. I would not call that a failed enterprise. One wonders how they still have the energy to continue touring to this day. I saw AC/DC live like a couple of years back, and they looked like they were struggling.
So, if you don't consider the Rolling Stones doing by still being on tour a failure, do you not consider the financial success of Call of Duty continuing to sort of hash out the same things a failure? Like, how is the Rolling Stones continuing to go on tour well into their 70s?
I don't think I'd ever describe Call of Duty as a failure.
But you had a reverence in describing the Rolling Stones that I don't feel like you'd have when talking about...
Well, they're very good at what people expect of a rock band.
Sure.
They sing their songs and sweat all over people.
Which is like Call of Duty, right?
A little bit more expected of AAA video games these days. Or maybe that's just me expecting too much.
I don't know. It seems like there's a line there. You're giving a pass to old Mick and Keith that you're not giving to old Soap McTavish and I don't know any other
characters. Soap McTavish didn't write Gimme Shelter.
I'm going to be honest. That is true. Could you imagine what Soap McTavish would have been like if he tried to drum up a little ditty like that?
No, I literally cannot imagine any Call of Duty protagonist caring about something other than shooting foreigners for long enough to write a song.
What about, what's his name, Ghost? What's the guy who's got the scary mask?
I don't even bloody know.
I think his name might be
Isn't
Ghost.
Like half the fucking Call of Duty protagonist just a dude in a scary mask?
What about Black Ops? Was that a man or was that a group?
I remember the protagonist of Black Ops because I remember it being one of the most generic waspy names imaginable. His name was Alex Mason. And I remembered it because that's the exact same name as the protagonist of Red Faction Guerrilla.
No. No. That's not good. That's good.
Fungus Finder gives $2 and says, Marty, return to Monkey. Use less soap. It's natural.
For my face? I'm putting too much soap on my face?
Maybe. And then Jim Machette, member for 27 months in credit, says, Hey guys, just popping in. Marty, what happened to your head? Do you have shingles? Hopefully you'll be okay.
That can't be what it was. Is that a real... That wasn't a real comment, was it?
Yeah.
Oh my God, Jim.
Shingles is just adult chicken pox, isn't it? It's just the adult form of the chicken pox virus.
Got fucking roasted. I might have shingles. Who knows?
It can be a lot more serious than childhood chicken pox. That's why children are encouraged to get chicken pox early on.
I had chicken pox as a child, so...
yeah, me too. Also mumps.
I think I'm also, this is, again, I think someone said earlier that this might be like a weird light setting in my thing, because like, a little dry, like, it does not look this bad in my mirror.
Well, you know, no one's face looks as bad as it really is in the mirror, because our brain sort of does a little bit of filtering to our senses.
But like, I see it here.
That's, like, when I look at myself in the mirror, I always think my hairline isn't quite as receded as it seems. But then I look at a photo of myself... Mm-hmm. And I see, like, the true image of my hair.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Okay, I can appreciate that.
Camden Ninja gives $5 and says, Part of what makes the original good is its originality, which makes trying to recapture the spirit of the original self-defeating. See Star Wars. Well, there's recapturing the original and recapturing the spirit of the original, which I would say something like Zelda Breath of the Wild does.
It's but also frustrating when you still have like you can't throw the entire baby out with the bathwater in a Star Wars when you still get incredible works like Andor, The Last Jedi.
Star Wars is just a completely generic setting. You could put anything in it. It's just science fiction. Yeah. There's a planet with aliens. Ooh. You could set literally every science fiction story that has ever been told could be set in the Star Wars universe and it would fit in just fine.
Even 2001 with the monkeys and the baby?
Yeah, even that.
Oh my God. Incredible.
You just, instead of calling it Earth and Jupiter, you'd say it's the planet Mongbom, and it's and the gas giant in the same star system, which is called Kissy Vagina.
Kissy Vagina, yeah. That's where the Sith started.
Yeah, their secret like base orbiting Kissy Vagina. Mm-hmm. They'll never find us here, they thought.
Yeah, yeah. Chewbacca went on an adventure to Kissy Vagina at one point.
Yeah. See, the Sith make their base there because they know the Jedi can't bring it up without getting demonetized.
That's true. That's true. That's why they sent Chewbacca, because he growls.
Yeah.
YouTube won't demonetize his roars.
Anyway, enough of that riff. Fungus Finder gives $2 and says, Also, quit touching your face. Stop it. Oh, does it bother you when I touch my face, Fungus Finder? I love stroking my beard. I'm going to scratch my nose as well.
Nom, 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 nom.
Is that like a misophonia thing? Like, I hate listening to the sound of people eating. Do some people just hate the sight of people touching their faces?
I don't know. I feel like they should have to be on camera speaking extemporaneously for several hours a week and let everyone else point out all of their flaws and eccentricities and small tics and see how they like it.
You getting a bit touchy now, everyone's bringing up your weird forehead.
Oh, no, I was the one who first brought this up for a while. It doesn't bother me. I'm going to be honest. Chat, I love you. I don't give a shit what anyone in chat thinks about me.
Okay.
It is wild how little I care what anyone thinks about me. But I do appreciate it. I've gotten good tips. I bought some cremes that I put on my forehead. We'll see. I feel like the creme might have made it worse. But
yeah, I'm on the creme. Creme de menthe.
Oh, hey, Buka!
Anyway, Tsunami Dusha gives $2 and says, here's a joke for you. Foam stars.
Oh, foam stars. You know what foam stars is?
I do not know what foam stars is.
Square Enix is trying to make a Splatoon-like, but instead of paint, it's foam. It's like suds everywhere.
Well, that
and it
seems...
just looks like Splatoon, but it's just got foam sprayed everywhere.
Well, that seems a bit naked.
Yeah.
In terms of intentions.
Yeah. Yeah, it's even hard. It's like harder to visually read than Splatoon because it just fucking bubbles everywhere.
Also, it's kind of late to the party, isn't it? Splatoon's like three games in and no one cares about it anymore.
Yeah. Well, Splatoon's incredibly popular.
I'm sure. Well, all right, I don't care about Splatoon.
Oh, if you don't care about it, end a convo.
Exactly. You know, maybe only just now people are starting to like make the Splatoon likes, because I remember playing the Crash Bandicoot party game at GDC and this has a sort of a Splatoon-y vibe to it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, just really, really slow on the ball or not realizing how big it was.
Because games take so long to make. That's why it took so long for like the serious Souls-like ripoffs to come out after the success of the initial Dark Souls.
Yeah, and the first ones we got, like the original Lords of the Fallen, were kind of dumpy.
And then Breath of the Wild was out for a few years before the imitators for that started showing up. Yep. Like Genshin Impact and Immortals Phoenix Rising. Joseph Eastham gives $2. Eastham, I hardly knew him. And says, I want to see Warhammer 40K in Star Wars. Could happen.
Anything could happen. Yeah, those big old armor boys fighting a bunch of monsters.
Yeah.
He could actually be on Kissy Vagina or whatever the name of your planet was.
Kissy Vagina, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, that was the last super chat. Bit anticlimactic, really. And after all that, we have a grand total of one extra percentage point towards Avengers Night Season 4. Well, you tried. An effort was made.
I thought you guys did great.
Well, thanks very much for listening to Slightly Something Else. I was Yahtzee. I was joined by Marty.
Well, thank you all so much.
What have we got coming this week? I've got my usual zero punctuation on Wednesday. The one going out publicly is Assassin's Creed Mirage, relevantly. But the one coming out to members who get it a week early, don't forget, which is why you should subscribe, is going to be Lords of the Fallen. The new one, smart ass. Not the previous one with the exact same name that is going to confuse things forevermore.
I think we're safer with this one because I feel like the first one just forgot. Or people just forgot about the first one. Like, it was a very forgettable game where it's not like Doom or God of War where you're like, what the fuck game is this?
Well, people remember it now because they brought out another fucking game with the exact same title.
Yeah. I guess that is true. Yeah, and if you're a member, you can watch all of Yahtzee's things early and uncensored. You know all those cussies we were saying just now? You can hear those cussies in videos.
But you can also watch Extra Punctuation with the cussies. And there'll be a new one of those coming out this week too. Mm-hmm. And don't forget, of course, Adventurers Die. There's a new episode that went out publicly on Saturday, but there'll be a new one for members next Saturday. Oh, and we mustn't forget, on Wednesday, I will be starting a new streaming series that's not the post-CP stream, but it's in the same place of it and requires about as much effort, which is the only way I can do new things. I have to drop one of the old things first. We're doing Yahtzee Unscripted, in which I will be streaming new games that I haven't played. And we'll just, once we've streamed it, I will be writing up some notes, and we'll put out a little edited highlights video of the streams with a little mini capsule reviews. I think we'll be doing that at the weekend. Saturday, I think.
So yeah, in terms of stream itself, same ZP post CP time, same post CP length, right? So that's still going to get plenty of spoofs and goofs just on different games that you aren't already sick of, which is very nice.
I think this Wednesday, one of the games I'm going to play is probably going to be Mario Wonder, since you keep talking it up.
Very good.
But I'm sort of don't really want to play it for ZP, because I'm dubious that it's that much more than just another Mario platformer. But I'm ready to be convinced.
You could just do a nice little pairing with Sonic. There you go.
Two birds with one stone. Well, that I am reviewing in ZP.
You're reviewing Sonic, and you're now reviewing Mario.
Funny how these things turn out, isn't it? It's almost like one of them still, there's still more interesting things to talk about, something that continually fails. Anyway, that's it for my content. What else has The Escapist got to show for itself?
Later today, Hidden Gems. Casey and Jesse are going to be playing Laika Aged Through Blood, which is apparently a new indie game that people seem to really like. It's like a Metroidvania, but you're on a motorcycle. So it's a little bit like a Trials Metroidvania.
Ooh. Well, it's vaguely intriguing, so maybe I'll play that on Wednesday as well. There's a couple of slots open.
Oh my god, get your games in early, get your games in often. And then all the regular stuff. We'll be doing the recap tomorrow at the normal time. I think Nick is going to be doing Dark Souls tomorrow. Yeah, all the regular streams all week, so tune in for those and just be good to each other.
Okay, well, I guess that'll be it from us then. Thanks for watching. See you all next time.
Bye, everyone. Aww.